Okay, so we're continuing from yesterday about Eger Gov Shnei Eger. So here's the basic guys, the basic facts, just to review. I guess we left with a problem, right? We don't have any spars yet in this particular problem. So you have basically a guy is holding fruits in his hand, and he picks it up in Rosh Hashanah, let's say, and he puts it across the border. Okay. Puts it across the border, so now it's in the new Rishas. Okay. But, not only is he putting in the new Rishas, it's below three tvachim. Okay, he's doing this whole thing below three tvachim. And the halacha is below three tvachim is lavad. So it's like a munach on the aretz. Okay, so he's basically, again, he's transferring it out, picks it up in one Rishas, puts it into the other Rishas below three tvachim. So therefore, the object is a munach. Right? The object's a munach. So in theory, you could argue that he's chayiv, because he did nakir and he did hanacha. Okay. But there's one argument that could say he's pater, which is eged gufo shmei eged, which means that the... We explained a little bit, right? The attachment of his hand, or the relationship of the object to the first rishos via his body is considered a relationship. In other words, the object is still really related to the first rishos because of its attached, so to speak, his hand is attached to his guf. And Rashi explains, because yado basa gufo garir, which means that your hand is drawn after the body. The person pulls his hand after his body. Okay, and therefore, you could argue, even though technically, yes, you did put it across the border, but it's not the fact that Yadav Basagufo Garer prevents it from being a Hotzah. Okay, and that's Machlokas, whether you say this or whether you don't say this. So we explained yesterday what that idea is, or we had two possibilities for what that idea is. Why should you say, well, what's the logic? Just because your hand is joined after your goof. Yeah, but bottom line is, it's in the new Rishos. So we said, Rafi wanted to say that since the hand is part of the body, the hand is really a component of the body. This is similar to stuff when you were here. We did this stuff. Since the hand is part of the body, so therefore, if you wanted to identify the location of the object, you'd really identify it based upon the location of the body. Not the location of the hand, even though the hand's across the border. But you could argue that the other basa gufo garer means the hand is drawn after the body. It's a component of the body. The body's in the first rishos. So therefore, the identity of the object is still identified with the underlying of the first rishos. And therefore, you'd say that he's not going to be chayev. Okay, that's one way to go. In which case, you'd have to understand, so what's the other side? What's the machlokas, whether you say that or not? A different svara, the way I think Chaim was thinking, and this is why I was thinking about it also, was that, no, forget that. Even if you'd say that really the identity, conceptually the identity of the thing is, or his hand, where it is. But still, the fact that Yado Basa Gufo Garer, which means a person pulls his hand back to his body, means that the malacha is like omed to be undone. Okay, it's like, for instance, he said this, the principle in Shabbos of Davashen and Miskayim. If you write your name in the sand, then the wave is going to blow it away, you're going to wash it away any minute, that's not malacha. Because malacha is where you have a product. It's productivity, and it has to be a real product. It has kiyam. Okay, so if since you put your hand across, although technically it's a munach, since your hand is part of your body, and you pull your hand, it's natural, person is bound to pull his hand back to his body, no one keeps their hand outstretched forever. So therefore, although it is in the other rishos and it's a munach, but since Yad was a gufa garer, that prevents the din hotzah, the din malacha in the thing, because the malacha, which is omed to be undone, doesn't have a din malacha, and therefore he'd be pater. So either as far as whether you say like Rafi, because its conceptual identity is based on the guf, or because practically it's omed to be undone, I mean, I think they're both good possibilities. But the question is, so what's the other side? Because this is a machlokas. This is one side that says, gufo shmei eged, which means the attachment, the fact it's attached to the body, is considered like it's still attached to the first rishos. But the other sheet holds, no, eged gufo lav shmei eged. So the question is, what's the machlokas? I mean, he says, no. I mean, you can't just say no. explain what's the question? What's that depend upon? What do you say there or not?
Let me show you something interesting. There's a Tosfos. I don't want to go through the Cheshbon and Tosfos, but I just want to show you what Tosfos concludes. If the Tosfos Hasam L'may L'migimel, it's on Tzadi Beis and Aleph. I didn't tell you about this because I just realized that. But I think it's... I was thinking something like he's saying. But it has to be explained. It's difficult. Rima Mefarish, it's at the end of the Tosos. Hasam L'may L'migimel. There, a different case he's talking about. It's talking about where it's above three Tvachim. V'isam L'memer D'shmei Eger. Then, above three Tvachim, then you could say... Eged Yad Shmei Eged. Kedam Perakamad Yad Basaguvagar. Because after all, your hand is pulled back, pulls after your body. Avol, it's Hasan. But Hacha Lemata Migimel. The Lav Shmei Eged. So you say, is the difference between above three Tvachim and below three Tvachim? When are we saying Eged Gufo? Lav Shmei Eged? And I was really saying everyone would agree that your hand is, you say Shmei Eged. Your hand is pulled back after your body. Like we had the Gemaras before on Daf Dalet, we did those Gemaras. Hand is pulled after the body. We know that. That's true. The only thing is that here we're talking about under three Tvachim. Not so fast. Under three Tvachim, we're not necessarily going to say it. Okay? So it seems like that's the way the Ri is learning the Machlokas. It's like, it's not a Machlokas about whether you say the logic of the Shmei Eged. You do say it. Of course you say it. Adavas Agufagar. For sure. Machlokas is about whether you say it below three tvachim or not. Which, as we explained, just that seems difficult. And it's not supposed to really make sense, I mean, until you understand that. Because on the surface, who really cares what's the difference between above three tvachim or below three tvachim? I mean, do you say your hand pulls back after your body or does it not? But that's what he's... I had a svara based on that idea, but I just saw it till the Tosa confirms it. Like, I knew that was like a weak point because I was going to posit that, but I see Tosa says it. So, but that's what he's learning. He's learning, so let's go with that. I don't know if everyone holds this way. I mean, it seems the beginning of Tosa doesn't necessarily hold that way, but let's go with that. Okay, I mean, you could go with that. These are the stories you guys are trying to say is not that way, right? In a certain sense, it's easier to give a svar like this than the other way. Because if you just say questions, do you hold by Yad Basa Gufo Gar or not? It's like a funny question, like, yes or no? You know, it's like, it's hard to nail down. One guy says this principle. He says, "Nah, I don't really hold by it. You know, it's hard to define." But if he says that everyone holds by it, the only question is, does it apply in a certain case? So now you have a little bit more to work with. You know, as they hold by it, but now it's a question of understanding and application of it to a new case of a matam and gimel. So again, so our case here is where it's under three tvachim. You're putting your hand across the border under three tvachim, so it has din of a munach. But do you say that yadavas a gufo garer? And therefore, it's not really Otsa. Therefore, either you're going to pull your hand back, or it's identified with your body. On the three Tvachim. Or above three Tvachim, then definitely you'd say it. Yadavas Agufo Gara. Okay? And you may, as an aside, in case you're wondering, like, if it's above three Tvachim, anyways, there's no Hanacha. So that's the whole reason the case is below three, because you need Hanacha. But that's what he supposedly gets into, is because Kunti Rikiva, you don't need Hanacha, because Kluta Kamisha Hanacha. There's a difference idea, but so even according to Rabbi Akiva, you're not going to say you'll say Yad Basa Gufo Garer on it's above three. Okay, so you can leave if you don't follow that. Fine, leave that. But I'm just saying that's so. The question is, why should you not say it at below three? What's the difference between above three and below three? One difference is factually, there's below three and above three is below three. It has din of munach because it's like you say love it, and it's like it's on the floor. But above three, you don't say that. I mean, presumably that's what he's building upon, you know?
That's the only difference we know.
Yeah, below three, yeah. Right. That's the only difference. I know, I'm pretty sure that's the difference. But the question is, why should that make a difference? Because still, yeah, that's a gufagar, you know what I mean? But, yeah, that's why the three makes a difference. Because that's why if it weren't below three, it's not even a munach. So when you put it below three, now you say it's like it's attached part of the karka. That's lovet.
And would it be that...
Just to read the Rambam anyways. Just, you know, it's always a good idea. We're trying to get a svar about why you wouldn't say, right, why you wouldn't say, I get gufo shmei eged, right? That's why you wouldn't say that your hands are going to be pulled back. So the Rambam actually doesn't say that. Okay, so we might as well look at him, look what he says. Maybe he helps. It's always a good idea. So he says, basically says that you need to have anacha. In order to be chayv, you need to have anacha, in general.
That's if your hand is above three tfachim. But if your hand is within three tfachim from the ground, that's if you place it on the ground, and you're chayav. Maybe the question is in lavad, or in how lavad's going to apply here. Okay, because like the Rambam says, it's kami sheiniach baaretz v'chayev. Okay, kami sheiniach baaretz v'chayev. What does it mean? It means it's like you actually put it down on the ground. Right? Now, if you actually put it on down on the ground, you can't say yadavas gufagara that you're going to pull it back. You already put it down. Right? Let's say you actually put it on the ground, then you don't say, "Well, the guy's probably going to pick it up and pull it back." That, no, it's kami sheiniach baaretz. And Lovud tells you, that's what Lovud tells you. Lovud tells you it's a munach. It means that is the reality. Halachically, it's halach moshe mesinai. Lovud's halach moshe mesinai. But that's the moshe mesinai posits that when it's lamata migimel, it's basically, it's baretz. It's like it's baretz. Literally like it's baretz. Halachically, it's entirely, has all the properties of being baretz. Kamishmei al baretz. So now, just like you say now it has a din munach, it also, you can't say yadavos agufagar. Because halachically, the thing is baratz. The thing is baratz. It's kamishinach baratz. Bechayev. Okay? Or you could argue now that lavud is very good to give it a halachic chaloshem of a munach. What you say, is the thing a munach, or is it a, does it have a shame of a munach, or is it still on the avir? The thing is that lavud will say it's a chaloshem of a munach. It's a shame nach. But the reality that it's in my hand, you can't say it's pretend it's not in your hand, it's in my hand. You know what I mean? So it gives it halach chal Hashem. But since in fact it is in my hand, and since it's in my hand, physically the malacha is all made to be undone, because I'm bound to pull my hand back to my body, other basa gufo garer. So therefore, it's not the malacha. The fact that love could give it a halach chal Hashem of a munach. But again, the fact that my hand is going to be pulled back is a fact which undermines the productivity of the malacha. So he says that lavud is not going to make it actually not in my hand. I mean, that's the machlokas. Like, well, lavud simply give it a halacha chaloshem munach, but the fact that it's in your hand is a fact which halacha has to deal with. Or you say, no, that lavud really gives it kamisha munach baratz. It's mamish. Allah, in all respects, the halacha moshka salav is halacha moshka mesinai. So halacha moshka mesinai comes in and says, that basically, it's as if it's on the ground. So if it's on the ground, it's in a full hand all together. You're going to bound to pull it back. Yeah, that would be true without the halacha moshka mesinai of lavud. But lavud says that's the halacha reality. The halacha reality is, it's as if you already put it down. You didn't put it down. That's the din of lavud. Lavud, that's the halacha mesinai. That axiomatically, the halacha mesinai posits that it's commission of chavarat. The question is like, how far does the halacha mesinai go? Does it just create a halacha chal Hashem of a munach, where it actually means it's commission of munach chavarat in all respects? Yeah, could work with the Rashi saying also. In other words, if it just gives it a din of a munach, so it's very nice. It's a munach, but either you'll say, but now, but Bamo is still bound to be undone, so it has no shame halacha. Or you could say, like what Rafi is saying, that it's very nice as a shame of munach, but since your hand is part of your body, so therefore it's still identified with the first Rishos. It's conceptually, it's munach where, but it's thin makom, it's really the original place. But that's all assuming that you say that it's still in your hand. But if you say that lavud means that's the halachic reality is, that the thing is on the ground, so if that's the case, then you can't say either of these things, because that's assuming it's in your hand, but the halacha mesinai is telling you that you don't say that. The premise of this thing is, the halacha mesinai, it sounds a little funny, I know there's something funny sounding about this, but the premise is because halacha mesinai are unique kind of halachic structures, which are, I mean, all halacha mesinai are weird, there's something strange about them, because they don't exactly fit, and this is what Rabbi had a share about, and that's true share about halacha mesinai. It's the Masorah share. That basically said, halacha mesinai is where, like, halachically, they like, so to speak, seams in the system, which basically means, like, the normal halachic logic would not result in these halachas. But the Torah wanted them to exist, for whatever reason the Torah wanted them to exist, and it had to posit them axiomatically. Like, that's the fact. Less than three lavad, it's attached. Walls, it goes up to Shemayim. These are certain principles which, for whatever reason, the Torah wanted them to be so, but it doesn't follow a normal halachic logic and the Torah positive axiomatically. So I'm saying, so that being the case, because how far does it go? Does lavad go? Does it mean literally in all senses, basically pretend it's on the ground? And normally you don't say pretend in a halacha because halacha is very precisely defined, but this is a halacha of Moshe Sinai axiomatically positing it's on the ground. Or do you say no? It's just, it's giving it like a chal Hashem of a munach, but it doesn't mean that it's actually at rest. I mean, presumably this is contingent upon, I mean, I'm not in all the sugyas of lavad. That's the only thing is a little bit speculative about this, is that presumably it's possible that if you did the sugyas of lavad, which there are sugyas of lavad, it comes up in Shas Lahan, could be that you'd have to, revise this or revisit it and work it in with the different cases. What I'm saying is, from this sugya alone, it seems like that's a good question. And and for instance, the lavad isn't only with regard to din munach. Lavad could just be like with regard to a tziruf between between the space, like walls of a sukkah that which have strings. It says, but still, the question is, still could say it's, is it just giving it a chal shem of like attached? Or is it actually making halacha, you have to really treat it like that's what it is? Is it like actually defining the reality, or just giving like a halacha Hashem? And the difference is going to be vis-a-vis like secondary properties which result from the state of being in your hand or of not being in your hand. So if it's just a halacha Hashem, what the other properties aren't going to come with it. But if it's saying actually that is the reality, halachically, that is the reality, then even secondary properties are going to follow that posited reality from the halachos of Mishnah. Okay, so now we're ready for Tosos by us. Okay, so Tosos is on Daf Hey Yomar Aleph, Shabbos. Alrighty, it's Tosos Kigon. Okay. So basically, let's think here, what do we need? Okay. So basically, you have a thing that's like this. Is that in our Mishnah... Okay, so here's the Mishnah. The first Mishnah Shabbos says, it's talking about Hotzah. In Hotzah, there's two things, Akira and Hanacha. Okay, in order to be Chai for Hotzah, you need both Akira and Hanacha. One person has to do both Akira and Hanacha. Now, there's a principle is that Akira and Hanacha have to be into a location, which is a makom, which is Dalet. Dalet al Dalet, fourth Fachim by fourth Fachim. Okay? Otherwise, it doesn't have a din of a munach. Okay? Otherwise, it's like an unstable Hanacha, and it's lacking in the din of a Hanacha. So the problem is in the case of our Mishnah, you have a guy picks up a roll in his house, puts his hand across, and puts it into the hand of the Ani. And he's Chayiv, because he did Akira and Hanacha. Problem is, it wasn't into Dalal Dalal. There's no your hand. Isn't Dalal Dalal. So why you chayev? Okay, that was the bothered the Gemara for a long time. Bad adaf, trying to work out who's our Mishnah, who doesn't need Dalal Dalal, or says that your hand works.
Dalal Dalal.
Yeah, the fourth vachum by fourth vachum. So fine. So that's good. Now the question. So one answer the Gemara gives is Rav Avohu wants to say that it's talking about where you put it into the hand of the other guy where it's less than three tefachim from the ground. So therefore, it's not a munach in his hand. Your hand really isn't a munach because it's not dalal dalal. Rather, the reason why it's a nach is because you're putting it in the hand which is under three tefachim. So it's like you're putting it down on the floor. So you're putting it down on the floor when you put it down in the guy's hand. Okay, so that's the case. So fine. If you posit that's the case, then it's fine. Okay. Now, Tosus is bothered, because Tosus is bothered for a simple reason. Okay, so here's the reason why. Let's assume another case. The Mishnah has a second case. Okay, basically, the outline of the case is if one guy does Akira and one guy does Hanacha, so then they're both bothered. Okay, you have to have one guy who picks it up and puts it down. If one guy does one, the other guy does one, they're both bothered. Okay, fine. So now you have a case where, let's say, you're in the house and you stretch your hand out into the street, okay, empty hand. And now the balabayas, the ani, the guy out in the street picks up a roll, puts it in your hand, and then you pull your hand across and put it down. So then you're both pater. the Mishnah is Yibul Padeh, because the other guy picked up the bread, put it in your hand, and your hand then pulled the object back and put it down. So neither guy did both. Okay? Fine. So, Tosis asks, wait a second, but if you tell me this whole thing is under three tvachim, so when he puts it in your hand, he's basically putting it down on the floor. Right? He's putting it on the floor because it's under three tvachim. And then you pull your hand into your rashus, you're being okered and you're being maniachet. Right? Because in other words, it was under three tvachim, so it was like it was on the ground. So now when you pull it back, you're basically picking it up, uprooting it anew, and putting it down in your rashus, so you should be chayiv. But as it's clear, if the case of the Mishnah is less than three, then you should say that. But you see clearly our Mishnah says, if the other guy picks it up and puts it into your hand, and you pull your hand back, you're both pater, because he didn't give you the anacha. So it must be it's not talking about lesson three. And that's a problem. You know, that's Tosas Kasha. How does Rav Ohu say the case is less than three, but it's too good of an answer, because once you say it's less than three, then you should be chayiv, even in the case where the guy puts it in your hand, then you pull it back. Okay, let's see the question? Okay? So Tosas answers that the reason why you're still chayev, I'm sorry, your potter in that case, is because Rav Avohu holds eged gufo, shmei eged. Okay? Which doesn't register. It's not registering. That's what you have to explain. What does that mean to do with it? What does that mean to do with it? He just says that Rav Avohu holds eged shmei eged. Because if you held lo shmei eged, then that whole thing won't work out. Because then exactly what I just described to you is that when he puts it in your hand, so now basically the thing is at rest because it's less than three, and then you pull it back and you're doing no kiran alacha. But somehow, since you say eged gufo, shmei eged, I mean the other bus of gufo gar or something like that, so therefore it works out. Therefore, that's why, even though he put it in your hand less than three tvachim, you'll say that you are potter for bringing it back. But the question is, well, who cares if you were shmeyeged? But bottom line is, you did an aki, it was on the three tachim, so it's a munach. And then you picked it up and pulled it back. So, what does that mean to do with that aki shmeyeged? Altogether, it just seems like, forced. So it just doesn't seem related at all. So why is this dependent upon aki shmeyeged? What's aki shmeyeged have to do with it? I mean, that's what you have to explain. It's not exactly the same case. It's somewhat similar, but you have to show how you could apply Eged Gufo Shmei Eged here, such that it will result in this difference. Just to recall, what Eged Gufo Shmei Eged meant, it meant the hand is pulled after your body. So it means that if you put your hand across the border, so you'll say you're not chayev, it's not a malacha because you're bound to pull it back. Okay, you're bound to pull it back, or something like that, right? You're bound to pull it back. So therefore, but here we're talking about where you have your outstretched hand, and you... It's less than three, so it's like a muna, and you pull it back. So why are you not chayev? So why are you not chayev if you say Eguv Shmei Eged? If you say Rafi's way, I think it's very good. It's almost automatic. Because when you have your hand across, and the guy puts it into your hand, so your hand is really part of your body. Your outstretched hand is really part of your body. So it's real Shem Rishos, it's identified, the Rishos identified with your body. So when you pull it back, you're not really accomplishing it. That's not at all, because it really already had the identity of the old Rishos. It already had the identity of the old Rishos. You know what I mean? Like, your hand is outstretched. Again, cases where you have your empty hand and you put it into the other Rishos, and the other guy puts it into your hand, under three. And then you pull it back. But once it was in your hand under three, your hand's part of your body. And therefore, your hands are your body, its identity, its real din rishos is the rishos of your body. So therefore, when you pull it back, you're not really doing anything. It already had that din rishos. How could you be chai for that? How could you be chai for that? But if you would say, that since it's lamata migimel, it's really like it's a munach, and it's not part of your body anymore, because it's like it's physically on the ground. So then you say that the object really is really in the other rishos. And then when I pull it back, now I'm doing hotzah. So according to Rafi's way, really, it's smooth. It's very good. What about according to the other way? Could we do that for the other way also? You could ask on Rafi's pshat, if you're going to tell me Eguv Shmei Eged, then why isn't the first guy chayev? Because the first guy's putting it in my hand, and my hand is really part of my body, so therefore it's like the other guy's putting it in the, you know. But that I think we explained already, because it's not a lacks in a maisa hotzah. The other guy, it's true, halachically you'll say it's the chafza's shame rishos by the body. But a maisa hotzah has to be a transfer in the object. And physically, you know, you're just putting it down in the same rishos. So the other guy's not going to be chayiv either. The other guy's not going to be chayiv because he didn't do a maisa hotzah, and you're not going to be chayiv because the shame rishos in the object already was basar gufa. It was a gufa. So that's good. So what about according to the other pshat? Okay, so the thing is, I understand what you're saying, the basic idea, but the thing is that, remember, what does he hold according to the way we were learning? What does it mean? It means that if you put your hand across, right, but you don't put it down, so ege gufo shmeege means that your hand was a gufo garer, so it means you lack in the real productivity, because you're basically doing something which is omeid to be undone. So that's not a real product. Even though it has a shame of a munach, but it's omeid to be undone. So since it's to be undone, it lacks an Israel din malacha. Okay? So I say over here too, what's that?
Never started.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's over here, when he put it in your hand, the object was already, so to speak, on its way, pretty much ready to be here. So that's not productivity. Like productivity is where you take an object, which is really kavua and the other rishos, you break its kvias, and now you come along, break its kvias, and you really redefine the thing. But here, the object started, it already was omeid to be in the new rishos. So you're just, so to speak, like enabling that which is already like bound, already in the situation. That lacks also in the productivity. Productivity, again, is where you are really the cause of productivity. So it can lack because it's omeid to be undone, or it can lack because when it started, it was already omeid to happen. So that lacks in your being a producer. A producer is someone who takes something which is not there and you make it. But if the thing is basically omeid to be undone, you're just, so to speak, allowing that which is built into the situation to unfold, that's now lacks as the malacha also. That also lacks as the malacha. So if you say, Yadavasa Gufo Gar, even Lamata Migimel, you say Lovewood is very nice, it just gives it a shame of a munach, but bottom line is, the hand is omeid to pull it back. So then you say that, there's no din, then you say that I'm not going to be chayiv in such an instance, because I'm really just, even though you put it in my hand and it's a munach, but it's all made to be pulled back, so I'm not going to be chayiv. But if you say that lovud really means factually it's like the thing is on the ground, in which case you're not going to say your hand is going to be pulled back, then the thing is physically on the ground. So now when I pull it back, I should be chayiv, because I'm basically doing a new akira from fresh. It wasn't built into it at all. It's on the ground. Then I'm doing an akira, I'm doing an acha. So I should be chayiv. So why am I potter? So that's why he says that Ravo must hold like a gufo shmeyeged. He must hold like a gufo shmeyeged. And therefore he holds that the thing, you're not going to be chayiv if it's all made to be pulled back. Yeah. So to speak, like when he put it in your hand, if it's all made to be undone, it's like he put it in your hand, it's true technically it's a munach in the other rishos. But basically the object is destination of the rishos of your body is already like programmed into it. So then, you know, it's not lax in din malacha to just realize its din or its rishos of the body. Because it's already there. It's already there. Malacha is where it's kavua in one rishos and you uproot it, break that identity and give it a brand new definition. That's malacha. But it just, it's not exactly identical as the first case, but it's based on the same type of logic. So malacha, you're doing something permanent and you're breaking something permanent. You know? You're breaking something which was permanent. Yeah. So for tomorrow, what I'd like to do, it's tomorrow's Thursday, right? Mm-hmm. It's 4:40, you don't know. Well, maybe we'll start 4:45, we'll say.
All right, you want to
know? Yeah, I guess let's go for 4:45, it should be fine.
All right.
So we'll try to do, it's very interesting cases. You had cases, basically, if you throw an object and it lands on a guy's hand, so you're chayef or zrika. The guy who throws it is chayef, because they're throwing it, it's like it lands on the floor, it lands on the guy's hand. But if the other guy runs and intercepts it and catches it, so then you're potter. Because you are not really the cause of the anacha. The other guy is the cause of the anacha. Yeah, we did that. We did this. What? Yeah. Your action was going to land in some other place. Now the other guy causes it to be land and rest in his hand, but that has nothing to do with you. You're not the cause of the anacha. It's din of a munach in his hand is totally due to him, not due to you. The relationship to that place where it landed is due to him, not due to you. But if you throw it to him, it's like it's omeid to land in his hand. And the fact that he's catching it, that's not active. Of course, he throws something that he's going to catch it. But that, basically, you're the cause of its relationship to his hand. That we already did. But the case of the Gemara is now is, let's say you throw an object up, and you run across the border, and you catch it in your hand. Okay, what happens then? Okay, if you are the same guy. Because if a different guy runs and catches it, you're potter. But now you're the same guy, so you could argue you did that here, you did that enough. So do you say that? Do you say you're like two guys or like one guy, essentially? But there's Rashi as one pshat, Tosus as another pshat, and the Rebbein Chananel, which Tosus quotes, but it's also the Rebbein Chananel is a different pshat. Three different ways to learn that Ibaya of the Gemara.
All three.
I guess not all three for tomorrow, but start with Rashi. I'd say start with Rashi, try to get a svar for Rashi. Maybe then we'll set up for next week the Tosus Rebbein Chananel, you know? But at least start with Rashi. Basically, we said last night, just to recall, because it might build on a little bit, was that Hanocha isn't just physically, because the question is, why don't you say if I threw it, I was the cause of it resting? The fact that the guy ran, I mean, it's true it rested here as opposed to there, but I'm the cause of it resting. But we said, no, it doesn't work that way, because rest means it's a relationship to a place, to a makom. And who's the cause of it being in that makom? Hanocha is a certain kfias in a makom. But who's the cause of it being in that makom? So if I throw it to a stable guy, I'm the cause of its kfias in that makom. But if he runs and intercepts it, he's the cause of its kfias in that makom. Okay, so therefore you say I'm not chayev, because there's an implicit hanacha built into the akira. When I throw it, throwing has a hanacha that it's gonna land somewhere. So therefore I'm the cause. I'm the cause of its hanacha. But that's the way it works normally. But again, its relationship to that new place is due to me. But when he runs, then he's the cause of it. Okay, that's essentially what we said. But I mean, we'll see. I mean, now this is going to force you, whenever you have an Ibaya like this, it's going to force you to redefine these things a little, you know, and you ask a question. Sometimes you understand something, you have different ways of, it's not so precise. But the questions help you really get down what's really going on here, you know? That's a value of Ibaya oftentimes. Not because of the crazy case of a guy who's going to be doing this, because it helps you. I mean, that certainly could happen. But it helps you understand the underlying principles at work, even in the normal case. Even in the normal case, you understand the sugya better. Sometimes you need a good question. It's like an experiment in science. Science, you devise these crazy experiments. But the experiments may be crazy, but they're designed very carefully to be mevarer, to determine what is the underlying law of nature. So experiments, that's what I like in Ibaya's I like. It's funny, Ibaya's. So they're like experiments. They help try to get the underlying concept in the sugya. Sometimes a funny case helps you pinpoint what's the idea. Yeah.
Thanks. We're continuing now with the machlokas between Rav and the Gemara as to whether the malamed schus can be chos or malamed chov by Gemara din or no, or he can't at any point. Tashema, donin elu kineged elu, asheyira echad minamachayven, divrei hamazakin. That's from later on in the Gemara. It's talking about a situation where they've become deadlocked. Donin elu kineged elu, hechad nechlechu bedin, when they're divided, shloshim v'shisha machayven. You have 30, so obviously it's a bezin of 71, which can happen. They keep adding, you know, they can keep adding if judges, if they have any odeya. So let's say, but you can't add beyond 71, that's it. So if you have 36 mechayvin and 35 mezakin, okay, so it's 36 to 35 in favor of conviction. V'kai malan. But we hold ein matan l'chov al pi echad. But we can't conclude, for we cannot convict with a majority of one. You have to have a majority of two. So then, what do you do? Donin b'rayosehen elu kineged elu. So they go up and back. They deliberate. They debate with their arguments, etc. Up and back. Obviously, the point being to try and reach a consensus. Ad sheyachzabo echad min hamachayven. Until one of the mechayvin will change his opinion, dehavalahu mezakin ruba. That is, if you get one of the 36 to switch, so then the tally will be 36-35 for acquittal, and then you can acquit. You can be over the din for acquittal, because for acquittal, all you need is a simple majority. What's at issue over here is the statement of the Braisa of Danin Elu Kineged Elu Ad Shiira Echad Min HaMachayven Divrei HaMazaken. It seems to be that the only way out of this jam, this log jam, is if one of the Machayvim will change his mind. If so, then you'll create the majority for acquittal. Okay? From this, the Gemara wants to deduce a raya contrary to Rav. V'yamisa, d'bi Gemara din, yochol lachzor, ulalamin chova. If, however, it is possible. It's true that by Gemara din, that one of the Melamed Tzchus can be Melamed Chova. So then you have another way out of the logjam, and that is Nisninami. So let him also teach Ipcha, the opposite. V'neima, oh, Echad Menem Azak and Estevi HaMachayim. In other words, if you hold that one of the Melamed Tzchus can be Chos and Melamed Chova at the time of Gemara Din, so in that situation of 36-35, there are two ways. You should list both ways out of the problem. One way is if one of the Machayvin will change his opinion and become a Malamed Deschus, then you have a simple majority. But there's another way then. One of the Mazakin will change his opinion and learn to be Malamed Chav, then you'll have a majority of two. So why did he see fit only to mention one possibility, the possibility of Schus? Oh, it must be because the other possibility does not exist. Why? Because once you're Malamed Deschus, you can't become Malamed Chav, even at Gemara Din. So you have a kasha. According to the one who argues with Rav, once you have a majority like this for, once you have a, that's what he's saying, once you have a majority of one for conviction, you can't convict. You can't convict because, if that's the situation, because all the others, the others, the minority, in this case, have all voted for Schus, then they can't change. So then, the only way is to be Gomer the Din for a Schus. Yeah. So the Gemara says, V'yamisa listening nami epcha. If the other alternative exists, that is that you could still convict him, so let us learn the opposite. That's a good kasha against Rav. Apparently you can't switch.
Solid.
So the Gemara says, Tana aschus kamahada. Achov lo kamahada. What does it mean, Tana aschus kamahada? So Rav says, Nichale la dure. He prefers to voice the idea in the positive. But he's saying, really, you're right. Don't take it exactly, that specifically. Really, he holds that either way. But he wanted, so he's illustrating the point that they debate up and back until you create a majority. But for purposes of illustration, he only mentioned one possibility. Really, he holds the other one as valid as well. But he wanted to mention this possibility because this seems to express the underlying idea that v'shaftu v'yitzilu. This is an expression of Hatzalah. To summarize, at first glance, it appears to be that you can deduce from the Tana here that he only considers one possibility. Why doesn't he mention the possibility of a Gemara Din Lechov? Oh, so would you not say that's because in order to do so, one of the Melamdei Schus would have to be Chos and Melamed Chov, and that can't be even at Gemara Din, which is contrary to Rav. That's the question against Rav. Rav now retorts and says, no, you can't draw the inference that he holds that can't be. But the fact that he only mentioned one side is because he wanted to express one side. He didn't want to express the other side. He wanted to teach the principle with Lush and Malya. But indeed, really, the halach is either way. This is the Mishnah on Daf Mem on Amud Aleph is where this is coming from. If you take a look at the Mishnah on Mem Amud Aleph, which concludes, well, this is the concluding phrase in the Mishnah, V'nan Elu K'neged Elu, Achiyira Echad Min HaMachayv and Divrei HaMazaken. That's the way the Mishnah is structured. Now take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi says, "Achayira echad ben amachayvim es divrei hamazaken, dika hatia latova al pi yedechad." Then he says, "Okay, so you have a simple majority." Then he says, "V'hu adin im yira echad ben hamazaken That's divrei hamachayvin. But the same is also true if one of the mezaken will agree now to the words of the mechayvin, dahavalu shlosha v'shiva mechayvin, because then you'll have 37 mechayvin, v'ikat tayelur al pi shlosha, and then you'll have a hatia al pi shlosha. Uvishas gemar din ho kimna, and by gemar din we maintain the af hamalamitz chus yacholachso ulamit chova. Okay. So he's incorporating what we just learned. V'hadit anan hachi. And that which we've learned here, in other words, the Mishnah over here doesn't state that, is Mishum Lishnamalia.
Right.
That's simply because of Lishnamalia, das chus kamahadeh, because the objective is to find chus. In other words, since that's the general thrust, the whole thrust of the court is really to try and mazaka the person. So he stated this principle. He taught you the general rule that they debate until you get a majority. But he stated it in the positive because that's really aschus kamahada. V'achi teritzna b'pirka d'liel. And that's how the Gemara answered it in the perik above, which is what we're doing right now. If you take a look at the Rambam in Sanhedrin perik tishi halacha beis. Rambam says Sanhedrin katana shenechlku b'din nefashos. Shneim asa omrim zakai v'yechad asa omrim chayiv hareza zakai. Okay, that's shneim asa omrim chayiv v'yechad asa omrim zakai. If you have 12-11 for conviction, oh she amru achad asa zakai v'yechad asa chayiv v'yechad omer eni yodea. All right, we had reference to this point before, right? So in other words, a case where you have a simple majority for chov, which is not enough to be gone with a din, or you have an even split, 11-11 and an eni yodea. The Rambam here is setting up the situation where you have to have hosafos. Afilu esrim mushnayim mezakin, even if you have 22 mezakin, omechayvin, so you have the majority that you need, via echad omer eni yodea, and the one says eni yodea, yosifu shnayim. You add two.
Even if you have
a... We discussed this before, but the question you could ask over here is, if you have 22 voting one way or another, what's the point? What do you have? What do you care if one says any odeya? Because, and you're going to have to put somebody else, whatever that other person is going to say, Zakai Ochayev, he's not going to make a difference.
Still going to be majority too.
Correct. Unless you want to say that, well, by bringing him in, he could state an opinion, and then maybe he'll change their minds, if you want to say that. But anyways, that's not the answer. The answer really is that you don't have anything when you have 22. It's not a halach of 22 people. It's a halach of the Sanhedrin. And once you have the Sanhedrin, so then you judge in terms of rov. A simple rov for acquittal or a majority of two for conviction. But you got to have the Sanhedrin. You see? So if one the person who says any yodea is not part of the Sanhedrin. He's mafki himself from the Sanhedrin. He's not part of the Sanhedrin because he can't be done. In order to be part of the Sanhedrin, it has to be done. Any yodea is not done. This would be akin to saying you had 22 people in the room and no one did the count. You thought there was 23. Could happen. And you judge and so on and so forth. And 22 people, or 22 versus 21 versus 1. Okay, so you have one person. Either way, whatever the case is. Okay, so then somebody realizes that hey, we're missing the 23rd. Okay. So what do you do? Would you say, what difference does it make? Why do we need a 23rd? He's saying, he's not going to change the verdict. What's the answer? The answer is, there's no Sanhedrin.
Right. You didn't have a Maizadin.
You only had 22 people judging. So now we learn that if the 23rd, if you had a physical body, 23rd person, and he can't judge though, he's got to be a judge. And his inability to judge the case, to come to a conclusion, disqualifies him. So now you know you only have 22. That's the halacha over here. And you cannot be gomer the din with 22. And one person saying any yodea. So the Rambam says, Zesha Amar any yodea, Harehu Kamisha Eno. That's his point. If he says any yodea, it's like he's not there. Share Eno Choser Umalamit Chova. He cannot be Choser Umalamit Chova. Venimtu Achar Hatosefes Esrim Viarba. Chut Mizah Mustafik. Okay? So now it's going to come out as follows. Since he says, Eini Odeya, so he disqualifies himself. And then he can't be Malam Echov, because only a dying can be Malam Echov. But we said it means, but as a Talmud, he would have the status of being a Talmud. He could be Malam Echos. Okay? So now you have to have a Hosafa. And the Hosafa always must be two. So now you're going to have a Sanhedrin of 24. Okay? Now, Amrushneim Asar Zakai, Rushneim Asar Chayev. Now you're opening up to see. You can see why it's going to increase the Osafos now. Because the Rambam is going to explain how a Sanhedrin of 23 can snowball into a Sanhedrin of 71. It can happen. It all began when you couldn't be gomer the din with the 23, and you had to do additions. Now, once you do additions, you're adding in units of two. So now you have the possibility of a 12-12 split. Okay? If you have 24, right? If you have Echad Asa Omim Zakai, Achad Asa. If you have 11 saying Zakai, and 13 saying Chayiv, Afapisha Echad Minarishonim, Omreini Odea, Hareza Chayiv. Sharayam Achayiv and Ravu Bishnayim. Okay. Amru Shneimas Zakai, Shneimas Achayiv. V'yachad Omer Eini Yodea, Mosifin Shnayim Achirim. Then the Rambam says, V'chei Mosifin V'holchen Atche Yirbu HaMazakin Echad V'yu Zakai, O Yirbu HaMachayivim Shnayim, O Yosef V'yachayiv. Okay. Hayu Eilu Kineged Eilu V'yachad Omer Eini Yodea, O Shehayu HaMachayivim Yosef Echad Bilvad, Mosifin V'holchen Atchim V'yachad. If they reached 71. This is what the case of the Mishnah is talking about. So he says, in that case, Higiyu l'shim v'yechad. Shloshim v'shisha omrim zakai. 36 say zakai. U'shloshim v'chemisha omrim chayev. Areza zakai. Okay, that's easy.
36 to 30.
Now, shloshim. So, see, here he's reflecting the Mishnah. That comes straight from the Mishnah, right? Shloshim v'shisha omrim chayev. Ushloshim v'chamisha omrim zakai. But if you have 36, 35 for conviction, when you can't convict because you need a majority of two, donim elu kineged elu, ad sheyira echad mehen divrei chavero, umezakin oso, omechayven oso. The Ram did not adopt loshem alya.
Right.
The Ram did not bring it down the way it is in the Mishnah. The Mishnah only brought down one possibility. The Mishnah said, "Daniel, Acha Yira Divrei Machayvin, Divrei Mazakin." That's it. But the Rambam, when he brings Daniel Kineged Elu, that's from the Mishnah. But Acha Yira Echad Mehen Divrei Chavera, Umazakin Oso Machayvin Oso. V'im Lo Ra, but if they couldn't, Gadol Shebatayanim Omrim Nizdakin Hadin Upochin Oso. Then there is a point where it becomes. Where the din becomes, so to speak, it expires. Hung jury, whatever you want to call it. Nizdakin means old.
Oh, okay.
That's it. We can't, there is such a phenomenon.
Yeah.
That is, we can't reach a decision. If you can't reach a decision, so he's potter. Because basically, you have to convict. If you can't convict, then he's potter. That's what we call innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
But the question is, why did the Rambam not... Why did the Rambam express it this way as opposed to the Mishnah? I mean, is the point that the Rambam doesn't hold from Lashon Malya?
Right.
Obviously, the Rambam paskins like Rav. Okay, and he also paskins like the Mishnah. But Rav's interpretation of the Mishnah is that it can go either way. But I'm asking, when the Rambam formulated the Mishnah Torah, why did he deviate from the language that was employed by the Mishnah? I mean, because if that's the way it should be expressed, Lashon Malya, so aren't the Rambam employ Lashon Malya? The Mishnah, when we say Lashon Malya, I mean, you could say it's a stylistic phenomenon, which is true, but it's not stam a stylistic phenomenon. It is emphasizing a point, which is that it's when it comes to Dini Nefashos, it's not just an abstract pursuit of justice, as it is with Dini Mamonos. But that it's really an obligation to search for schus. So to emphasize that, then that's something that the people have to be cognizant of. You see that there's many mechanisms. You're not allowed to seat someone who's very old or doesn't have children. He's not considered to be a merachim. So that's a very concrete idea that the Sanhedrin has to have a certain awareness that their obligation is to search for schus. And only if you can't find the schus, then you have a right to be mechayim. So that's why. So Tana aschus kamahada means to emphasize that point. He had an opportunity over here in expressing this halacha to emphasize that point. But I want to know why did the Rambam did not follow that? Apparently, the answer is you have to understand the difference in the nature between the Mishnah and between the Mishnah Torah or the Yad HaChazaka. The Mishnah, the purpose of the Mishnah was not to write a code of Jewish law. It's not a code. Truth of the matter is, even that was a very, very big issue. You're not allowed to take Torah Shebal Peh, writing it down, Torah Shebal, but Eitz Lasos. There was a danger that it would be forgotten. So they just wrote down certain general Rosh Eprakim to serve as an aid to the memory, whatever, to the learning. But it's not a finished product. Obviously, you have to study and analyze it. As time went by, they wrote down the Gemara and so on and so forth. But the purpose of the Mishnah was to put down certain principles, certain general principles. And therefore, it's not exhaustive. So when he wrote it, when he wrote up the idea, and he left a lot to be room for deduction, you're going to have to deduce from this. It's not everything's not going to be spelled out for you. So that's the answer. It's a legitimate answer. So he's not going to write out every possibility. So the fact that he only expressed this principle that you deliberate up and back until you create a majority. So he, according to Rav, he expressed it, and you should be able to deduce that it works both ways, but there was no need to express both points, because you'll deduce that. And therefore, he had a choice between one and the other, so he chose the schos. That makes perfect sense. But the Rambam couldn't adopt that, because the Rambam already is in the era when he has to write a code. It's reached a level where people don't have the ability to go through the Mishnah and the Gemara and all of Shas and to come to the conclusions, all the psaks and so forth, that the purpose is to be a code of law. So here he had to include. If he omitted it from a code of law, then you would say that the Rambam Paskin, that they can only go after a schus, and that the Malamed schus can't be chos or Malamed chov, even the Gemara Din, which is not the case. The Rambam had to make it clear that the psak is like Rav. So the Rambam, of course, formulated it in accordance with the actual halacha, not in accordance with Lashon Malya. All right, the Gemara now continues. Tashma, Diyam Rav Yossi Bar Chanina. Echad min haTalmidim, Shezika Umeis. One of the Talmidim who was Malamed Tzchus and died. So what's the problem? What's the issue? Roen Oso Kilu Chai V'Omeid B'Mkomo. View him as though he's alive and maintaining his position. As Roen Oso L'Inyan HaMinyan. Well, does this imply that the Talmidim were counted in the vote? Rashi here implies that the Talmud not only is Malamed Tzchus, but actually that his vote is counted. The other question would be, if that's the case, why is he talking about one of the Talmidim? Why not one of the Dayanim? Let me ask you that question right now. Let's say one of the Dayanim died. It was Malamed Tzchus, Achav, whatever it is, and he died. What's the halacha? Well, Lechora, you have to have 23 judges. And Enio Dea doesn't count. I mean, if he's dead, where's the 23?